Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon. You're listening to episode 81, The Socialite.
Oh my God.
911, what is the address of the emergency?
Help me. Oh my God.
What is the address of the emergency?
1831
Is that a house, business, or apartment?
It's a house. It's Nancy's sister's house. My friend.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
Oh, okay. My friend had... I got my friend in the closet.
Who was Nancy Pfister? And why would someone want to murder her? Nancy Pfister was born in 1956. She was the baby of three children who were born to Art and Betty Pfister. Now, Art was from Minnesota, and he was drafted into World War II as a fighter pilot. But as it would turn out, Art wouldn't be the only pilot in the family. His future wife, Betty, was a World War II WASP, which is short for Women's Air Force Service Pilot. This was a program where women flew military aircraft during the war. In fact, Betty would receive the Congressional Gold Medal for her service. And she would also be named one of the 100 most influential women in aviation history. But it wasn't their love of flying that brought the couple together. It was skiing in Aspen, Colorado. After the war, Art had visited Aspen to ski and loved it so much that he decided to stay. He began building a home on Castle Creek in 1947, and then later that year, he bought the 700-acre Lazy Chair Ranch on Buttermilk Mountain for $30,000. Art and Betty would meet on the slopes, and then they would marry in 1954. They went on to have three daughters, Suzanne, Christina, and Nancy. At first, Art raised cattle on his ranch, and he had horses. But he was a visionary, and he had big plans for his land. He went to a friend who just so happened to own a large piece of Buttermilk property, and together they would develop Buttermilk Mountain into a ski area in 1958, so 2 years after Nancy was born. The bold move would solidify the Pfister family as Aspen royalty. They would go on to play a huge role in Aspen basically becoming the ultimate playground for the rich and famous. World-class skiing, a vibrant art scene, upscale shopping and dining. And growing up, Nancy had a front row seat for it all. Her parents were adventurous and fun, totally plugged into the social scene. Her childhood was a fairy tale. And as she matured, Nancy became Aspen's it girl. Everyone wanted to be in her orbit. When she was young, she had been briefly engaged to actor Michael Douglas, partied with Jack Nicholson, and journalist and author Hunter S. Thompson, and Nancy traveled the world. She had the spirit of adventure flowing through her veins, but she always came back to Aspen, and her father would build her a home on Buttermilk Mountain, and it's here that she would go on to raise two children as a single mom. By 2013, Nancy Pfister was 57 years old and an empty nester. And she had another big trip planned to Australia for 6 months. Her plans included renting out her home while she was gone. So in the fall of 2013, she placed an ad in the newspaper advertising her 4,400 square foot home for rent. Nancy felt she'd struck gold when she met 65-year-old Trey Styler and his 62-year-old wife, who was also named Nancy. From the moment that the Stylers pulled into her driveway in their Jaguar, everything felt right. The Stylers had been married for decades, and they had quite a story to tell. Trey had been an on-the-rise anesthesiologist in Denver when he met his Nancy. So Trey and Nancy worked at the same Denver hospital. He was a doctor and she was a nurse, and they would go on to get married and enjoy a long and fruitful marriage. They had a big home in an upscale neighborhood. But their world would come crashing down in the early 2000s when Trey was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, a condition that rendered it impossible for him to continue practicing medicine. He would be forced to give up his practice a few years later. But by then, Nancy had become an expert on growing giant water lilies. The couple was passionate about them, and Trey helped her with her gardening business. However, the Stylers' finances continued to freefall after two protracted legal battles had left them in a bad way financially. But Nancy Styler had a plan to change their bleak financial future. A grand plan to open a medical spa. As a nurse, she'd be able to provide expensive treatments for the rich and famous. And what better place to offer these expensive services than at Aspen's historic Hotel Jerome. Located in the heart of Aspen, Hotel Jerome was built in 1889 by a Jerome Wheeler during the silver boom. The Hotel Jerome was Aspen's original luxury hotel, but the silver boom would eventually bust. But thanks to Nancy Pfister's family, after World War II, Aspen would be developed into a world-class ski resort, and the Hotel Jerome was primed for a piece of it, playing host to the rich and famous. And it's here that the Stylers had set their sights on opening their medical spa. And it just so happened that Nancy Pfister, with connections all over town, loved the Hotel Jerome. And she loved the Stylers. And pretty much it was all settled. The Stylers would rent out Nancy Pfister's home for 6 months, paying her $4,000 a month for rent. The agreement called for a $12,000 deposit. The Stylers would pay Nancy Pfister $6,000 of the deposit upfront, and they would pay the additional $6,000 when they first moved in. It was great. The trio got along so well that Nancy Pfister offered to let the Stylers move in a few weeks early as she was getting ready for her trip to Australia, which they did. Nancy Pfister was so bullish on the couple's plans for a business that she threw a party at her house for them and invited all of her rich and famous friends, basically the who's who of Aspen. And the party was a rousing success. But there's a thing about new relationships. They're hardly forged in fire. In a short amount of time, the Stylers and Nancy Pfister threw their lot in with each other. It was all still quite a bit flimsy. And underneath the surface, small cracks were beginning to form as they cohabitated together before Nancy took off for Australia. Nancy Styler felt that once the couple had signed on the dotted line and moved in, that Nancy Pfister had been on best behavior, but that after they moved in, she'd become a tyrant, according to Nancy Styler. And the thing is that Nancy Pfister was beloved in the community, but she also had a reputation for rubbing some people the wrong way. I mean, she was a woman who was used to getting what she wanted, when she wanted it, how she wanted it. And if you stood in her way, well, she also had a reputation for being loud about it. During the weeks that the couple had lived with Nancy Pfister, they felt that they weren't being treated as equals. And Nancy Styler felt that Pfister was treating her like a slave. And she didn't like it that Pfister walked around the house naked in front of her husband. But Trey would caution his wife to be patient, that soon Nancy Pfister would be leaving for her trip and they'd have the place all to themselves. Well, sort of. Catherine Carpenter, or Kathy, was Pfister's personal assistant. The house sort of came with Kathy. She would be around to take care of things. This was a role Kathy had played in Nancy Pfister's life for the past 7 years. Kathy had met Nancy Pfister at the bank where she worked as a teller. They'd actually struck up a friendship, and Nancy had invited her to lunch. And then she asked Kathy if she'd like to become her personal assistant when she wasn't working her teller shifts at the bank. Kathy would do stuff like drive Pfister around, run errands, and help her when she was out of town. Over the years, it wasn't all work and no play. Through Pfister, Kathy was able to enjoy some of the fringe benefits of being a personal assistant to a socialite in Aspen. So, in November of 2013, Nancy finally heads off to Australia, knowing her house is being taken care of by the Stylers, and that Kathy is there too to make sure that her dog, Gabe, was in good hands. Part of the rental agreement was that Nancy Pfister's dog, Gabe, came with the house. Eight weeks after Nancy Pfister left for Australia, even though she was nearly 9,000 miles away from Aspen, trouble was brewing. Apparently, the Stylers hadn't paid any of the $4,000 a month rent, and they still owed her the other half of the $12,000 deposit. Pfister told the Stylers that they needed to pay what they owed, but the Stylers pushed back, because according to them, there were some issues with the utilities and some of the appliances weren't working. The relationship between the three had become so toxic that Nancy Pfister would send Kathy an email saying, quote, "Help me. Get them out of there. Find me new renters. Get me my money. Help me. Anything. Nancy." On January 16th, Nancy Pfister's attorney would reach out to Trey Styler about the non-payment, to which Trey replied, quote, "I don't know why Ms. Pfister is distressed. Perhaps she expected more communication from us, but there is no cause for concern here. We recognize that we owe Ms. Pfister some money and fully intend to pay fully. The $10,000 check we expected to receive last week has not yet arrived here in Aspen, and the moment it clears, Ms. Pfister will be paid in full." But Ms. Pfister wasn't paid in full, and she was so frustrated and angry, she went on social media to vent her grievances. On January 24th, writing, "Hi everyone, I'm still in Australia and I'd like to be staying in Australia, but the people that were supposedly taking care of my house are not doing what they said they would do. They're not paying rent and they haven't paid utilities. I put the rent very low so they would take care of my dog, a beautiful labradoodle named Gabe. If you have any ideas how to help me get someone in there by February 22nd, that would be great. Thank you." The Stylers were friends with Pfister on social media, so they were outraged when they saw the post. In the competitive field of health and wellness, they felt that Nancy had torched their reputations. In a world where word of mouth is everything, the Stylers were not happy. In fact, the relationship had devolved to such a state that they actually refused to speak with Pfister over the phone. And so Kathy, Pfister's personal assistant, became the go-between. But not for long, because Nancy Pfister was coming home. 3 months early from her trip, she told the Stylers that she would be back in town on February 22nd and that they needed to be out of her home when she returned with their belongings gone. And true to her word, Nancy Pfister flew home and Kathy would be there to pick her up at the airport. And when Kathy and Nancy arrived back to her home, the Stylers were gone. But they'd had to temporarily leave behind their expensive spa equipment, a critical piece in their plans to open a new business. They wanted to come back and get the equipment, but the day that Nancy returned, she made it clear to the Stylers that they were not to enter her house to get the rest of their stuff, and that they wouldn't get their equipment until they paid her $14,000 for unpaid utility bills and damage to her place. 2 days after Nancy Pfister had returned, she was still jet-lagged. And so on February 24th, Kathy would place a do not disturb sign on Nancy Pfister's bedroom door. She didn't want anyone interrupting Nancy Pfister, who needed some much needed sleep. And Kathy left to go work at the bank. 2 days later, Kathy was working another shift at the bank when she saw a friend of Nancy Pfister's who walked up to her teller window. Kathy could barely contain her anxiety when she asked her if she'd seen or talked to Nancy. The woman shook her head, like, no. Kathy then explained to her that she hadn't spoken to Nancy in 2 days, which was totally out of character for her. She was also worried about Gabe, Nancy's dog. Who was looking after him if Nancy had taken off? The woman was confused by Kathy's sense of urgency. She knew that Pfister could be impulsive. I mean, case in point, Nancy was supposed to be on a trip to Australia until May, and here it was only February, and she had suddenly returned to Aspen. Nancy had always lived the life of a socialite. But Kathy wasn't convinced, and by the end of her shift, she was driving up to Nancy's secluded home on Buttermilk Mountain. It was around 5:45 when Kathy walked through Nancy's front door, which was weird because it wasn't locked. But she felt relief wash over her when she heard Gabe barking. This feeling was short-lived, as she observed Gabe's food bowl was empty, and he'd gone to the bathroom multiple times inside the house. Kathy crept up the carpeted stairs, calling out Nancy's name. But there was only silence as she slowly made her way toward the master bedroom, something she'd done 1,000 times before. But this time, everything felt off. Inside Nancy's room, she saw a swipe of blood on the headboard of her sleigh bed frame. The queen-sized mattress was a mess of blankets, but there was no Nancy. And at the same time, Kathy was hit with a god-awful smell when she got closer to the master closet. Kathy went to turn the door handle, and it was locked, which was weird, because when she'd left Nancy 2 days before, remember, she was ready to hunker down for a long sleep, Kathy knew that she'd left the key to Nancy's closet inside the lock, and it was gone now. Kathy went to get her spare key, and back at the door, she put the key in the lock, and she turned the door handle. When she opened the door, she was hit with an overwhelming stench. Stepping inside, she sees white bed sheets covering a shape on the floor. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Okay, so it's springtime. The other day I'm jogging. I love seeing the flowers and the trees starting to bloom. I'm breathing in and out. The fresh air is amazing. And then suddenly, out on the open road, I feel like I'm running through a gauntlet of pollen. You know those little white floaty things? As a lifelong allergy sufferer, I know what inhaling that means. And by the time I'm home, I'm suffering, sneezing, nose running and itchy, and my voice sounds like I'm in a submarine. But hey, I know I won't be miserable for long because the second I step through the door, I'm grabbing my Astapro and a puff in each nostril. And in no time, I'm back to being me again. The moral of the story here is I'm outside every day, and now that it's springtime, I'm making sure to bring my Astapro along with me because I don't have time for an allergy attack that's going to take me out for hours, which is why every time my nasal allergies flare up, I know Astapro has my back and my nose. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. And Astapro delivers full prescription strength, indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Achoo! Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. That's Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Oh my God.
911, what is the address of the emergency?
Help me. Oh my God.
What is the address of the emergency? Is that a house, business, or apartment?
It's a house. It's Nancy Sister's house. My friend.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
Oh, okay. My friend had... I got my friend in the closet.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
My friend came back from Australia, said he's a servant, and he had some people living there. She really pissed them off, and, she made threats to them about owing money, and I don't know what it is. I couldn't find her. She didn't call, and these people said the dog had been in the house, and she hasn't been around. So I went up there to get the dog, and I was looking for her.
I need you to tell me exactly what happened.
I can't. My friend is in her closet, yes.
In her closet?
Yes.
Okay, stay on the line with me. We're going to send help that way.
The 911 operator would ask Kathy to check for a pulse. But by then, a hysterical Kathy had already fled the home. During that 911 call, she would say that she saw that Nancy was covered in blood and that she was driving down Buttermilk Mountain headed for the police station. The operator asks Kathy to pull over and to wait for police to come to her location. And when deputies arrive, Kathy is so distraught that she's taken to the hospital immediately and given a sedative. Meantime, investigators arrive at Nancy's house. They enter the master bedroom closet. They see the sheets covering a shape on the floor. A deputy bends down, peels back the covers, exposing a jumble of towels around a black garbage bag and what appears to be a human shoulder. He feels for a pulse, but doesn't find one. The body had been wrapped in multiple bags, and at this point, it isn't clear who the victim is until the plastic bags would be pulled down, revealing blonde hair. During autopsy, it would be confirmed that the victim, shrouded in those sheets, was Nancy Pfister. The cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head. It was believed that she'd been dead between 36 and 48 hours. It was determined that Nancy had no defensive wounds and there were no signs of a struggle, which meant Nancy had been brutally murdered, struck in the head multiple times with a blunt object while she was sleeping. A forensic team would begin the process of scouring Nancy Pfister's home. But one thing was obvious. There was no evidence of a burglary, and that whoever had killed Pfister had taken the murder weapon with them. The investigators knew that they had to speak with Kathy Carpenter right away. Remember, Kathy had been given a sedative, but by 9 p.m., she was ready to sit down and speak with investigators. And right away, Kathy would tell them about the couple who'd been renting Nancy's house. She believed that the Stylers were the killers. She explained that the Stylers, knowing that Nancy would be back, had rented a room at a motel in Basalt, about 25 minutes away from Aspen. How the Stylers were embittered that Pfister had refused to let them get their expensive spa equipment until they coughed up the $14,000 that Nancy Pfister said that they owed her, money they just didn't have. Kathy would also say that she heard Nancy Styler on multiple occasions say that she was going to kill Nancy Pfister, and that Trey had a bad temper. How on February 24th and 25th, Nancy Styler had texted her saying that they were cleaning Nancy's house and moving their belongings, which was weird because Pfister had made it clear that the couple was not allowed back in her home until they paid the money. The following morning, after Nancy Pfister's body had been found, investigators had obtained a search warrant for the Stylers' motel room. As they went inside of room 122, detectives would get an up-close look at how Trey's illness had ravaged the lower part of his body when they took photographs of the couple, obviously to document any unusual or unexplainable wounds that might indicate a struggle with Nancy Pfister. Trey's upper body was in decent shape for a man his age. From the waist down, he appeared emaciated. His legs were extremely thin. The couple were brought down to the station to be interviewed, and DNA was collected from them both. During these separate interrogations, Trey and Nancy Styler would adamantly deny having anything to do with Nancy Pfister's murder. They would say that on February 25th, the Stylers had returned to Buttermilk Road and found that Nancy Pfister wasn't home. So, along with their movers, they loaded up the rest of their things, and they went back on the 26th and did it again, and there was still no sign of Pfister. The Stylers also said that they were together the entire time, that they never separated. So, essentially, they were each other's alibis. Ultimately, the Stylers would be released. There was no physical evidence tying them to the crime, at least at that time, because the results of the forensic evidence that had been collected still hadn't come in yet. But that didn't mean that investigators were done with the Stylers. In fact, after the interviews, investigators would learn that Nancy Pfister's queen-size mattress had been flipped over and that the underside of the mattress had large, fresh bloodstains on it. Knowing the physical and medical state of Trey, it was difficult for them to believe that he could have flipped a queen-size mattress from one side to the other on his own. And there was other circumstantial evidence piling up that spoke to Trey Styler's state of mind in the days before Nancy's murder, and also the Stylers' larger financial situation. Investigators had learned from an employee at Alpine Bank that Trey had gone there 4 days before Nancy Pfister returned from Australia, applying for a $25,000 to $50,000 loan. He said he needed the money to pay first, last, and deposit for a new home. And he went on to overshare, saying that he was being asked to leave Nancy Pfister's home on short notice And he also said that he needed the money for a business venture and that Nancy Pfister was a mean person, adding, if something were to happen to Pfister, it would be best for all involved. When the loan was denied, Trey would tell the bank manager that he could commit suicide, that he had a $1 million life insurance policy that would ensure some security for his wife, Nancy. A few days later, Trey went into a jewelry store, looking to pawn one of his wife's rings, a 3-carat pear-shaped diamond ring with 2 1-carat diamonds on either side. Trey said he needed the money to open a spa at the Jerome and that he had to move out of his house in 3 to 4 days. The jeweler made an offer, but it was so low. Trey didn't just refuse the offer, but he lowered his head, hunched his shoulders, and didn't speak for some time. When he finally looked up, in front of the jeweler, he threatened to kill himself. Then, he eventually shuffled out the door. One of the last emails that Trey would send to Pfister, he said, quote, "Be careful what you wish for. You may get more than you expect." The case would make a dramatic turn on February 28th, 2 days after Nancy Pfister's body was found in the closet. A maintenance worker for the city of Basalt would call 911. He'd found a bag of trash in a receptacle in front of Alpine Bank, which just so happened to be directly behind the motel where the Stylers were staying. The heavy-duty trash bag caught the maintenance worker's attention because it was like 25 pounds, which was odd for that type of receptacle. So he looked inside and found a jewelry box filled with stickers and old photographs and empty prescription bottles with the name Nancy Pfister. And immediately, it all clicked. By then, the gruesome murder of the Aspen socialite had captured media attention across the nation and around the world. The maintenance worker recognized Nancy Pfister's name because he'd read a news report about her murder in the local paper that morning. When the investigators got their hands on the bag, they would recover an old bloody hammer. There were numerous credit cards belonging to Pfister, her passport and driver's license, and other documents. Inside that bag, they also found registration papers for the Stylers' vehicle and additional paperwork, which included their P.O. box. 3 days later, a key to Pfister's master bedroom closet was discovered near a trash can, which was just outside the Stylers' motel room. The key, which was given to investigators, was labeled Owner's Closet. By then, the hammer that had been found inside the garbage bag had been determined to be the murder weapon. The blood on the hammer belonged to Nancy Pfister, and Trey Styler's DNA would be found on the weapon. These developments would lead to the arrest of Trey and Nancy Styler, who continued to deny any involvement in the murder. But investigators were suspicious. They certainly didn't think they had a slam dunk because everything wasn't adding up. If the Stylers were the killers, they struggled with their apparent carelessness. The garbage bag, conveniently found stuffed in a waste receptacle near where the couple had been staying, and then the employee finding the key to Nancy Pfister's closet right by their motel room door. I mean, why would you leave a key that would connect you to a murder right by your hotel room? They had to wonder, were the Stylers being framed? And if so, by whom? The logical question would be, who would have the motive and the opportunity? The key to the closet that was found by the Stylers' hotel room when it was tested didn't have the Stylers' forensic evidence on it, but Kathy Carpenter's. In fact, Kathy Carpenter was still on their radar. Kathy had consented to a polygraph examination 2 days after she'd found Nancy's body. Among the questions she was asked, did you cause the death of Nancy Pfister? And do you know for sure who caused the death of Nancy Pfister? Kathy would answer no to both, but the polygrapher said her answers were deceptive. Trey Styler had also failed his polygraph test. Kathy was the last person to see Nancy Pfister alive. She had pinned a do not disturb sign on Pfister's bedroom door before she left. On the 24th, remember, Nancy was found on the 26th, and her time of death was believed to be 36 to 48 hours before she'd been discovered by Kathy in the closet. And investigators would learn that the day after Pfister's body was found, Kathy went to the bank and took out $6,000 in cash and two heirloom rings from Pfister's safety deposit box. Detectives also went back to Nancy's hysterical 911 call. And at one point, Kathy says, "She's dead, full of blood." But how could that be true when compared to what the deputies saw when they arrived at the scene? If you'll recall, a deputy saw a figure beneath a bunch of sheets, and when they bent down and pulled back the cover, the only skin that was visible was a shoulder, no blood. And Nancy's head had been wrapped in two garbage bags. You couldn't tell who it was. And when investigators spoke to Nancy's inner circle, they would say that Kathy had appeared less than happy about her working relationship with her boss, who often took her for granted. And Kathy had become close to the Stylers when her boss was out of town. The three of them had started hanging out, publicly trash-talking Nancy Pfister. Kathy Carpenter would be arrested 11 days after Trey and Nancy Styler. She was the third person charged with Nancy's murder. Despite Kathy's denials that she had nothing to do with Nancy's murder, investigators believe that she had worked with the Stylers to carry out the murder. But the investigation would be turned on its head once again a week before the preliminary hearing. Trey Styler would come forward. He wanted to make a deal with prosecutors. He would confess that he and he alone murdered Nancy Pfister. He told them that he snuck out of the motel room the morning of February 25th, that he went to Nancy Pfister's house because he wanted to reason with her. He still had a key. So he unlocked the door, climbed those stairs, went into Nancy Pfister's bedroom, where he sees her lying in bed. She's asleep. She's wearing an eye mask. He didn't realize that she had earplugs in as he begins talking to her. He says that when she doesn't respond, he just goes into a rage and begins bashing her head multiple times with a hammer. He then explains that in an adrenaline-fused frenzy, he was able to move her dead body to the floor, drag her to the closet, wrap her in garbage bags and sheets, and then flip over the queen-size mattress. But Trey's plea deal stipulated that in exchange for his cooperation, charges would be dropped against his wife and Kathy. He did this alone. Investigators weren't convinced that he acted alone, but without any physical evidence connecting the women to the murder, they agreed to the deal. Nancy would be released with prejudice, which meant she could never be charged with the crime. But Kathy was released without prejudice, which meant she was still under suspicion. In June of 2014, Trey would be sentenced to 20 years in prison for the murder of Nancy Pfister. In August of 2015, Trey Styler would hang himself in his prison cell. But the story doesn't end here. Up next, my co-host Brandon Morgan and I will discuss some details about the case that didn't make it into this episode. We'll talk about a book that was written by Nancy Styler and the $1 million life insurance policy that she collected after his suicide. So stay with us for more Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon, our bonus content. And as always, thanks for listening. From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a Pie in the Sky production recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.